Blog Talk Radio.
All right, 6:06, and we've got a new firestorm that is brewing from Trump. It is an insult that Trump laid out against Morning Joe and his lovely bride, his fiance, Mika Brzezinski. Joe Scarborough, that really has a lot of people furious. And here's a statement from Morning Joe that caused Trump to react.
Covers of Time magazine. He was so needy, he had not been on Time yet, that he made his own. Okay?
Oh my God.
This is your boss. This is your boss. He put this on display at least 5 of his clubs. It was first flagged by a reporter. Notice the
Trump is sitting on our front, even TV.
Several exclamation points on the headline, something Time magazine doesn't do. The make believe cover is dated March 1st, 2009, and highlights Trump's reality show, The Apprentice. Time magazine has since asked Trump to remove the phony cover. Phony. A phony, fake, pathetic, made-up cover of Time magazine. That's your boss.
In an email to the Post, the White House couldn't comment on whether the president knew it wasn't a real cover.
You should do some covers of yourself. You could just make them up.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Like Trump.
And by the way, Willie, I don't have to because, as you know, GQ, how many times have they had me on the cover?
Well, look at
it's
you.
About, it's
amazing.
This month's GQ, and I've got to say.
Look at the sweater. It's just hot.
I wouldn't go.
Our man of the year.
This is the president who is going to change Washington.
What a populist. Oh, way to stand up. The Goldman Sachs, Mr. President. We're really proud of you, buddy.
Good
way
on,
to
yeah.
go.
Why don't you get another
hey,
Time magazine
Hey, you're a populist.
Cover. Okay.
Oh, did you see his Time magazine?
Yes. Nothing makes a man feel better than making a fake cover of a magazine about himself, lying every day and destroying the country.
Okay.
It's a good feel.
Well, enough about me. But where are
your hands in that photo?
All right. So that's the thing that triggered Trump. And now I'll have a little clip for you explaining that. But anyway, he went off and he said that those guys had gone to his party in the new year and tried to hang out with him, and he didn't want to hang out with him because Mika Brzezinski just had a facelift and she was bleeding all over the place, which is certainly a bizarre statement, but here is a little bit from Rush Limbaugh in reaction to the firestorm that is, I mean, there's all kinds of people that are complaining about this. So check this out.
His tweets now on Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough. If you go back to the campaign, Trump has branded people that he considers his opponents. We had Low Energy Jeb. We had Little Marco. We had Lion Ted. We had Crooked Hillary. Now we have Low IQ Crazy Mika and Psycho Joe. Trump's tweets today have everybody bewildered. What in the world is he thinking? And it's actually not that. The tweets tell us what he's thinking. Why in the world did he do it? What is the point here? I don't claim to know, folks. I'm like everybody else. I would just have to start guessing. But I do have some insight for you that might, nothing can justify this, but it might, well, it might make you look at it a little bit differently. Here are the tweets. I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. I don't watch anymore. Then how come Low IQ Crazy Mika, along with Psycho Joe, came to Mar-a-Lago three nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me. She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no. Those are the tweets. You can't, what do you mean you can't believe the uproar? He cites bleeding here after what he said about Megyn Kelly? You, this stuff doesn't happen here. Well, but look at the media is predictably beside itself. CNN is literally, and we've got the sound coming up. Little Brian could not contain it. Little Brian Stelter couldn't. I mean, they're just, this is horrible. This is, oh my God, I wish the American people would wake up and revile what they voted for and understand what a reprobate they voted for. Oh my God, it's horrible. It's, they're having collapse fits at CNN. And a lot of, is what true? Yeah, they are. Little Brian says, I got pictures of her down there at Mar-a-Lago New Year's Eve, and she's not bleeding. It doesn't look like she's had a facelift. All right. Well, let me take a break here. Do you know that back on June the 8th of this year, right here in my formerly nicotine-stained finger, the Hill.com. Morning Joe co-host Trump may be mentally ill. MSNBC Morning Joe co-host Mika Brzezinski said Thursday that President Trump is not well and even possibly mentally ill. So this June 8th, well, roughly 3 weeks ago, Brzezinski said, I think he's such a narcissist. It's possible that he's mentally ill in a way. He's not well. At the very least, he's not well. Brzezinski explained that Trump may be narcissistic because he does not believe the rules apply to him, adding that this belief likely led to a sort of ignorance that applied it to the 2005 Access Hollywood tape recording, which Trump made lewd comments about women. Mika Brzezinski 3 weeks ago said, and he's so narcissistic, he doesn't believe the rules apply to him. That's where the ignorance label may apply. This is a man who says he can grab a woman anywhere because he's famous. The point is, he feels he can say or do things different from the norm because he's famous, because he's a celebrity, because he has power. Brzezinski's comments came the same day that James Comey was set to testify in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee about his investigation of Russia. You might, I don't know if you know this or not, that when Brzezinski and Scarborough announced their engagement, and that was fairly recently, that Trump offered to officiate. And Brzezinski essentially said, no. I mean, if Jimmy Carter were in the White House, like when my dad was there, but no. No. No way. Last summer during the presidential campaign and even during 2015, Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough were salivating all over Donald Trump. Trump appeared regularly on PMSNBC in the morning, and they loved him, and they were sucking up like you can't believe, and it was like three great friends together. Everybody was mad at Mika and Joe for not being objective and acting like they were best buds sucking up to Trump. So something has gone wrong in paradise.
All right, so that is a little bit of this brouhaha, and going to come back, and I've got a great clip for you on how all of the mainstream media is fake news from Prager. I think it's a good topic to start off on, because what we've been dealing with is certain claims that some news has been falsified, but most of the news is okay. But that's not really, anybody who watches this stuff carefully understands that there's a ton of fake news out there. Kelly O'Connell, I'll come back and, 6:15, I'll come back and get you your headlines. 523-1450. Be right back. A little Sandman here.
Ain't it foggy outside? All the planes have been grounded. creates a fire inside. Let's all go stand around it.
Bunny, I've been there since you've been here. We ain't had no time to drink that.
All right, here's some headlines for you. Crackdown on illegals. House passes Kate's law. And YouTubers doing a lot of crazy things for clicks. Judge revokes sex offenders' citizenship. New travel ban now in effect. Grandparents don't count in narrow definition of close family members. Lawyers getting ready to take these to court. Hawaii is already challenging it. Meanwhile, one of the hottest temperatures ever recorded on Earth, 129 degrees in Iran. Is it global warming? ISIS is almost done in Iraq. That's good news. The question of who's running in 2020, I guess, includes The Rock and Tom Hanks. 61% of people supporting big tax cuts. Debt set to climb another $1 trillion. And Congress is skipping town in D.C. 218 days off in 2017. Now, a cop clocked a motorcyclist traveling 146 miles per hour. He had to do so with an airplane. And you know what the speed limit was? 146 mile an hour and a 55. I guess that would be probably a pretty big ticket. And he was weaving inside and out of traffic. and he riding up the side of the road when they finally were able to pull him over. And I'm trying to remember where that happened at. Let's see here, Omaha. So he was ticketed for speeding, careless driving, driving with a suspended license, and having an unregistered motorcycle. Other stories here. Illinois has become the new banana republic and is something like $11 billion in the hole. A guy was trapped underneath his four-wheeler when he was attacked by a fox. He was at his farm, and the fox came and tried to bite him, and he jumped on his four-wheeler, and he took off. But he turned too quickly, and it rolled over on top of him, and the fox came after him. The guy had a tool bag fall down next to him, and he grabbed a hammer, and he killed it with a hammer, or he hit it with a hammer anyway, grabbed it by the neck until the help came, and then they brought the head of the fox to the down to the hospital or to the city. All right, so 71% of people say Trump's tweets are harming his agenda. And let's face it, it's probably not helping his agenda. And the fox attack occurred in Georgia, Athens, Georgia. All right, I have a clip here for you that I think will kind of make you put a bigger picture together. Prager University, what is fake news? Mainstream America news is all fake. This is good. Check this out. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was very true.
You've probably heard a lot of people recently screaming and yelling about fake news. Charges fly from all points on the political spectrum. This story is mistaken. It's fake news. That statement is incorrect. It's fake news. But to my mind, these arguments miss the point. Mainstream American news is all fake because the major news outlets are so consistently biased toward the left that whether any given story they report is factual or not, their overall reportage is essentially leftist propaganda. You can complain about the right-wing slant of Fox News all you want, but left-wing ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, and CNN have combined almost 10 times the viewers. Look, the chief journalist at ABC is former Clinton operative George Stephanopoulos. The president of CBS News is David Rhodes, the brother of a former senior Obama staffer. Comcast, which owns NBC, is run by a major Democrat donor. Same for the leadership at CBS and Time Warner, which owns CNN. Only 7% of American journalists identify as Republican. And while a lot of news outlets forbid their reporters to donate to candidates, 96% of those who did donate last time out gave to Hillary Clinton. These journalists claim that despite the fact they're all Democrats, they can be objective. It just ain't so. Psychologists have shown that when people associate almost exclusively with those who agree with them, they suffer from groupthink and confirmation bias and lose their ability to see events clearly. Now, it's not that these journalists are liars, exactly. It's that their bias skews their reporting in very specific ways. Let me give you Andrew Klavan's three rules of mainstream media journalism. These can transform any story, whether it's true or not, into fake news. Rule number one, whenever left-wing prejudices are confirmed by a single event, that event is treated as representative. But whenever left-wing prejudices are contradicted by a single event, that event is treated as an isolated incident. And if you treat it as representative, you are deemed to be hateful. So for instance, a white cop shoots a black suspect. The mainstream media treats that story as representative of general police racism, even though studies show cops don't use deadly force more often on blacks than on whites. On the other hand, if a Muslim commits an act of terrorism and someone is bold enough to point out that the terrorist act is in fact representative of the daily acts of Muslim terror around the world, this is considered Islamophobic. The leftist media cherry picks when an event illustrates a larger narrative. That's fake news. Rule number two, when a scandal breaks on the right, the news is the scandal. When a scandal breaks on the left, the news is who wrongfully disclosed that scandalous information. Thus, when the media wanted to raise suspicions that Donald Trump was somehow in league with the Russians, they freely quoted illegally leaked information from intelligence sources. But when Congressman Devin Nunes announced he had information that the Obama administration might have misused intelligence against Donald Trump's transition team, the story became, how did Nunes get that information? And did he do it legally? The scandal meter is heavily weighted to fall to the right. Fake news. Rule number three. Individual extremists on the right are highlighted, but the overall extremism of the left is ignored. In one of the fakest fake news stories in recent history, the mainstream media rose up as one to tar conservative Tea Party members as racist, when all they really wanted were lower taxes and less government spending. Reporters gave the Tea Party disparaging nicknames, represented their almost universally peaceful gatherings as ugly and violent. And whenever an individual Tea Partier said something wrong, it was cited as evidence that the movement itself was tainted. Meanwhile, the continually violent, vandalizing, anti-Semitic socialist movement that went by the name of Occupy Wall Street was hailed by journalists as an important social development, right up to the moment it vanished without a trace, except for the piles of litter its protesters left behind. Peaceful Tea Partiers wanted the small government prescribed by the Constitution, so they were radicals. Violent occupiers wanted the widespread government intrusion of socialism, so they were heroes. Very fake news. Newsweek editor Evan Thomas was once criticized when his magazine essentially convicted some white Duke University lacrosse players of raping a black woman, a rape it turns out they did not commit because it didn't happen. Thomas defended himself, saying, "The narrative was right, but the facts were wrong." The mainstream media almost always get their left-wing narrative right, whether the facts support it or not. That's called confirming your own prejudices. It's called bias. It's called fake news. I'm Andrew Klavan for Prager University.
Confirmation bias. Pretty good little clip there. All right, let's take a break and get our local news 523-1450. What are your plans for the weekend? Feel free to call in, or if you're embarrassed, don't call in. And if you're going to be sitting around the house, don't bore everybody. 523-1450, if there's any topics you want to cover, we'll be right back.
I understand you've been running from a man that goes by the name of the Sandman. He flies the sky like an eagle in the eye of a hurricane that's abandoned.
All right, so they submitted a letter. Doniana Kenny formally submits a letter supporting Oregon Mountains National Monument. And this is from yesterday, El Paso Herald Post.com. And Doniana formally submitted the resolution 2017-61 supporting Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument to U.S. Department of the Interior. And Isabella Solis, the chairwoman, says, "My colleagues and I listened to hours of emotional and impassioned input before reaching our decision. Reaching the decision was both challenging and informative. We asked Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke and President Trump to support the commission's decision to keep the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument protected as it is today. Our communities have worked for decades to protect nationally significant resources on federal lands in our area while continuing our multiple-use tradition on those lands. The Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument designation does that and has greatly benefited the residents of Doniana County." According to Billy Garrett, in addition to supporting the monuments, the resolution also opposes, quote, any reduction, rescission, or attempt to harm the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument and supports the continued protection under the law of valid existing rights, including private property rights within the monument. And they did vote 4-1 to support that. And the lone voice of dissent was, of course, our own Ben Rawson. So then the question is, and I ran into somebody yesterday at lunch and was talking to them about it, what people were expecting. I mean, obviously Trump is not afraid to go against the opinion of anybody. So just because the county sent that letter to the to Zinke, it doesn't mean that they're going to do that. On the other hand, you know, they wanted to seek input from the local community, and that is input. Now, I would say that you can argue it two ways, that it's unfair and it doesn't represent the opinion of a large portion of the county. On the other hand, this is a fairly liberal county, and maybe it does represent the majority of the people out there. So what I would want to see, though, is what is the how are they measuring the positive economic impact of this new designation, this monument? Where's the evidence? Where's the proof? It seems like we've been in a bad economy. The economy is not growing. Unemployment is high. And so where would you go to prove these facts? 523-1450 if you have an opinion on that. Now, getting back to the original topic of fake news, here's from Thaddeus Russell. Modern-day left-wing politics has evolved into secular Puritanism. Now, what was Puritanism? People that formed our country were Puritans, of course. Puritanism, or Puritan, was a broad description of people who wanted to purify the Church of England, and so their opponents nicknamed them Puritan. So it covered all kinds of different people. It covered Baptists and Anglicans, some members of the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church is the church they were trying to clean up. Presbyterians, Congregationalists, and all of these people ended up coming in one form or another over here and became synonymous with rules, a lot of rules, whether that's accurate or not. Most people don't have any information about Puritanism, and they just have a negative impression. But the Puritans were an incredibly influential intellectual movement, and we got virtually all of our ideas that we use today out of the Puritan Revolution. So anyway, here's Thaddeus Russell, modern-day left-wing politics, secular Puritanism. And this guy is an author and a professor. Check this out. And this is from the Rubin Report.
Liberty today, and joining me is an adjunct professor at Willamette University and author of A Renegade.
It is Willamette, and that is in Oregon.
History of the United States. Thaddeus Russell, welcome to the Rubin Report.
Thanks for having me.
Thaddeus Russell, that is a name.
Sure is.
Of a man who I feel knows what he's saying. You know what I mean? Like, there's some gravitas to your name. Do you feel that?
First of all, my mother gets all the credit. You know, people sort of compliment me on my name all the time, and I say, hey, I had nothing to do with it. I wish I could take credit for it.
But do you see that as the person
sure.
that has name? Like, just Thaddeus.
I think it's unfortunate because, you know, then I have to be good.
Yeah.
I have to sort of say things that make sense, and it's a lot of pressure for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which you just put on me. Thanks a lot.
I just put an extra dose of pressure.
There you go.
And now for an hour, you're going to have to make perfect sense.
Oh, man.
Because you know about this. This is the internet, podcast.
Perfect sense coming up.
Video. People are going to judge every word that comes out of your mouth.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to this because we're going to talk about postmodernism. I think you have a slightly different take than some of my previous guests. You have an interesting history. So let's just dive into it.
Okay.
You grew up in a Marxist household in Berkeley, California.
Mm-hmm.
I've given a lot of good buzzwords right there in that first sentence. What was that like?
You could also have said the 60s and 70s, too. That's when I was growing up.
Yeah. That's a lot. I mean,
yeah.
Right there, that's a lot. Plus the name, Thaddeus Russell.
Yeah,
we've combined things here.
I'm kind of done. I mean, we can just stop the interview now. My parents were members of a small Trotskyist sect. It's called the International Socialists. And what they did was they industrialized, which meant that they left their middle-class lives and went into heavy industry and to organize the proletariat for revolution. So my mother became a clerical worker to organize the secretaries for revolution. My stepfather, who had gone to Exeter Academy and the University of Chicago, he left his world to become a steel worker and a truck driver. And the mission was to convince the workers to rise up and bring about a communist revolution. So that was unsuccessful.
Yeah. And, do you know what caused them to do it? Was it just that generally what was happening around then with the war? And
yeah, it's hard, it's hard to explain why people come to particular ideologies, but they chose Berkeley in the 60s. They moved there and fell in with this hardcore group. And that was their lives. And so that was my life when I was growing up. And we had meetings in our house, and the comrades were sitting downstairs and talking about stuff. I had no idea what they were talking about. I learned later.
Right.
But, it was heavy Marxist theory, and which union shop should we infiltrate, and which factory should we organize. And then there were visitors to our house. There were Black Panthers. We lived about three blocks from the Black Panthers national headquarters, which was actually in Berkeley, not in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And they were around, and sort of hippies were around, and members of the IRA came and gave speeches and stuff like that. So, and my mother, one of the interesting things is that my mother was the dominant figure in my family. She was the heavy duty intellectual, actually. And so the idea of, women being weak or victimized or unable to compete with men has always been just a weird thing for me, an alien idea. Because she was always the dominant force, and I always looked up to her and tried to model myself after her.
Yeah. So were you, once you became of age and started thinking about these ideas, did you immediately jive with these ideas? Did you have pushback or?
Yeah. I mean, so I will say this. My parents, as I recall, did not try to indoctrinate me directly, but you can't help it, right? I mean, if you're raised in a church family, you're going to think that that's the truth and correct and the way to be. And that's what I said. I mean, my mother said, that in fact, she said this in one of her speeches, that when I was about 10 years old, she said, I want to grow up to be in the IS. That's what I want to be. I want to be a socialist mom. Yeah. How do I do that? And that was kind of my mission. And I really mean that. When I went to college, I didn't know what socialism even was.
Yeah.
And so that was my mission. I said this. I said, I'm going to learn what socialism is and then become a socialist. And that's sort of what I did for a while.
Yeah.
But that wore off.
Yeah. So you write a lot and you talk about the outsiders, really, the rebels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the people, the drunks, the fringes of society, the people that were probably at a lot of these meetings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't
know.
No, not the people that
no.
were at these
meetings. No, that's a misconception. Yeah, my work.
Right.
So it's okay.
No, please clean it up.
Yeah, no. The people, let me tell you how I got there first. So I end up going to Antioch College in Ohio, which is this ultra, ultra left college run by hippies and anarchists, basically,
mm-hmm.
and punk rockers. And
yeah.
In fact,
I think that's Evergreen State.
I was just going to say, no, I mean this. We used to compete with Evergreen for being the most politically correct, the most left-wing college in the country. And we always thought, oh, they don't know what they're doing. We are the true radical college.
Wow, that's hilarious.
I think we were the champions. And I have a lot of stories I could tell you about the insanity at Antioch College,
yeah.
which is kind of one of the reasons I started to think twice about this politics and this culture. And
well, can you give me one example? Let's just dive into that for a second, because that'll claim this interesting.
Let me give you two.
Yeah.
One is just sort of tragic and disgusting, and the other's more comical. The tragic and disgusting one was there were two kids at Antioch in my third year who had an anti-Christian art exhibit. And so they had crosses on the wall, and they had a fire in a barrel in the middle of the room. And at one point, they took one of the crosses down and threw it in the barrel, right? Everyone there understood this was an anti-Christian statement.
Yeah.
Oh, no, this was racism. This was the Ku Klux Klan. Those kids got expelled.
Wow.
Because it was widely perceived to be an act of, racist violence. And they had to leave the college. And I was the editor of the newspaper at the time. And I said, and this was kind of a turning point for me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what are you talking about? This is insane. It really had this witch hunt feel on campus. And I felt guilty and bad for having to come to their defense simply to explain that it had nothing to do with race at all.
Yeah.
And that there was this hysteria that really takes no prisoners. I mean, you have to eliminate the evil once you identify it.
Yeah. Why do you think that ideology breeds that hysteria? Because we're seeing this literally right now.
Yeah. There's something that goes on in college campuses. Actually, my mother said this to me when that happened. She said, well, you know what? They need the devil. They need to have a devil.
Yeah.
As soon as you step on campus, you start reading about the history of oppression. And, I think a lot of that's correct in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bad things that have happened in this country and elsewhere. And then you look around and you're an affluent, very privileged person in this world. You're in the top 1% or more. Every college student basically is that, especially at Antioch. So there is no devil. There is no Bull Connor. You know, there's no one like that around here. So you have to find one. And so what we did was we kind of focused on administrators, the president, you know, and his evil administrators. We just assumed.
Right. They inherently have to be evil.
We assumed they were evil, and they were out to get us, and so we had to get them. And so one day, one night, two kids broke into the president's office and took a shit on his desk.
I do apologize for that. We'll take a break here, and 523-1450 to call in. I've got, you get the feeling out of this is that there is a new set of rules. There's a new religion out there. It is political correctness, and it is much more powerful right now than the church. 644 Kelly O'Connell in Las Cruces, and we'll be back to switch gears here and hear back from James O'Keefe and his protests against CNN and the mainstream media. All right, I've got to queue up the James O'Keefe clip, but it's pretty long, so just want a little bit off of that one. Here is Gingrich on why Trump puts out so many crazy tweets.
Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, author of the New York Times number one bestseller, Understanding Trump. Mr. Speaker, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
So I think you understand the president. I don't understand why he would get in the way of what is a successful and needed message, soft nationalism, soft populism, with a distraction like this.
He is an instinctive gut fighter. It bred into him probably by dealing with Page Six in New York in the 1980s. It is so deep in his psyche that you hit him, he punches you. He doesn't think it would be good to punch you, would be bad to punch you. He punches you. And look, I don't defend some of the stuff he does. I've told him to his face. I think that I love about 80% of his tweets. We negotiated, I got up to 90. But the last 10% is hopeless. And it's just who he is. It's, you know, in many ways, he's an extraordinary historic figure. In some ways, you wonder, why does he undercut himself? And maybe eventually he'll learn not to do it. But it's integral to his personality. You hit him, he's going to hit you back.
Is there someone in the White House who works for him, with who has authority there, with a clear list of the objectives he articulated on the campaign? And by the way, the other night when he spoke in Iowa, keep the country out of pointless foreign wars, restore the middle class, jobs. Yeah. Do you think they're focused on those things?
Look, I think 98% of the time, President Trump gets focused. He wants to make America great again. It's not just a slogan. He wants to create jobs. He wants to reform regulations. He wants to fix the health system. He wants to fix the tax system. And then about 2% of the time, he goes back to being the Donald Trump who used to be, a private businessman saying whatever he wanted to. And the 2% of the time, of course, in the media world, blows up and takes up almost half the space.
Right.
All right, so that's probably a good enough explanation. We'll take another break here and come back. I've got a little reporting for you on Venezuela, which is about to, they feel like there could be a civil war there breaking out. There was just an attack against the Supreme Court from a helicopter, believe it or not. The same problem I had yesterday, so I'm going to go ahead and let this play through for you this time. National news. All right, so anyway, let me pull this down here a little bit. I know this is a little bit strange. I put in a note to the tech guy, but now I'm wondering if there is national news that is right behind this, which would be CBS News. I don't know if you care about that, but let me just see if it comes on to play. Anyway, one thing about live radio is you've always got to be able to roll with the punches. And whether it be guests not arriving on time or not showing up at all is one issue. Another one is finding the right clip. Another one is having a malfunction. That's, I guess, part of the charm of this line of work. Now, here, let me see here. All right, so this has got me queued up for 6 minutes early. So let's just dive into this. I've got for you right here what's going on in Venezuela. Police helicopter attacks Supreme Court. Really a bizarre story, but I've been reporting on Venezuela for a couple of years now, the total collapse and chaos over there. And the sad thing of the application of too much socialism and the destabilization that it brings. But check this out.
The helicopter circling the Supreme Court and a government ministry helped escalate the country's political crisis in what President Nicolas Maduro has called a terrorist attack. The aircraft fired 15 shots at the Interior Ministry, where scores of people were at a social event, and dropped four grenades on the court, where judges were meeting. Maduro has faced 3 months of protests from opposition leaders, who decry him as a dictator, who has wrecked a once prosperous economy. There's been growing dissent, too, from within government and the security forces. The president says what the demonstrators want is a coup against him, encouraged by the U.S. government, eager to gain control of Venezuela's oil reserves, set to be the largest in the world. Meanwhile, drama broke out at the country's National Assembly on Tuesday, where 24 lawmakers said they were besieged by pro-government gangs. There is speculation on social media that the helicopter attack could have been staged to justify repression or cover up the drama at the National Assembly.
All right. So, I mean, here's the thing is that you've got all these rules that came in. What happens when socialism takes over? The government takes all authority to make any decisions based on anything. And so the authority is ceded from the people over to the government, and then the government has the job of making all the decisions. And there's too many decisions in a country to make by just the government to do it efficiently, to make wise decisions. Plus, the type of people who want to have that kind of power tend to be unbalanced individuals anyway. So the upshot is that when you've got a takeover of socialism, there's always a degeneration of life, of the economy, the standard of living, laws, safety, et cetera, healthcare, all these different things. This is always seen. All right, here's Venezuela on the brink of civil war, former U.S. Ambassador Bolton.
No, that was good. Ambassador Nikki Haley, U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley, speaking about what's happening in Venezuela. A roll tape.
We need to keep the pressure on Maduro. There are signs that he's now going to start using his military and use weapons. And anything you've seen on TV, it is so much worse.
Ambassador, now joining us now is John Bolton. He's with us. Should we just flat out intervene in this catastrophe? And by that, I mean get the CIA to do something or our military to do something. What do you say?
Well, the catastrophe has been at work for a long period of time. I mean, I think the Maduro regime is in deep trouble. I think it has opposition from within the military, which was a basis for the Chavez coup over the years. But in fact, the opposition itself is badly disorganized, and their capability of governing, even if they took over, is open to question. Now, all that said, yes, I would do a lot more. I think that the threat that Maduro poses is not just inside Venezuela. I think he's been being manipulated by the Castro regime in Cuba. I think Venezuela, because of its uranium reserves,
what would you do?
Biggest in the world.
What would you do?
Well, I think that the opposition would like to reestablish a representative government, and I would find ways to help them out. My only concern is that the opposition itself is filled with problems. So nobody should be under any illusions. This is going to happen quickly.
President Trump's national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, he laid out America's strategy on North Korea. Watch this, Ambassador.
So the president has directed us to not do that and to prepare a range of options, including a military option, which nobody wants to take, right? The threat is much more immediate now. And so it's clear that we can't repeat the same approach, failed approach of the past.
So what would be a military approach?
Well, the argument is that North Korea is very close to having the capability to drop nuclear warheads on the United States via ballistic missile. And one option would be to go in and destroy the launch areas, the test facilities, and some of the nuclear facilities. The danger is that in retaliation, North Korea could easily attack the northern suburbs of Seoul, which are right across the demilitarized zone from North Korea. And I think everybody agrees it's not a happy option. But the fact is, we've failed for 25 years because of diplomatic efforts to chit-chat North Korea out of nuclear weapons. Well, and I think what McMaster's saying is we can't do that anymore, although we haven't launched a different strategy
yet. If they can threaten Los Angeles with an ICBM, with a nuclear tip, aren't we justified in shooting down any missile that they set out over the Sea of Japan? We could
sure.
Do that. Yeah.
Sure. And if we had an effective national missile defense program, I'd be confident we could do that. But after 8 years of the Obama administration, funding of what the Bush administration had started was gutted, basically. So, no, we don't have adequate missile defenses at the moment.
Okay. Mr. Ambassador, thanks for joining us, sir. Appreciate
glad
you
to
being
do
with
it.
Us. Yes, sir.
All right. So I just think it's important. Number one, don't forget that Venezuela is in the Caribbean. It's part of the Caribbean Sea. You know, it's on top of South America. So it's much closer to us than a lot of these other countries. It's very important. It's also very important because of the size of their petroleum reserves, the largest in the world. Now, because of the way that fracking, slant drilling, et cetera, and all these new methods of extracting petroleum have developed, America is not only on the verge of leading the world and has been leading the world for the last couple of years in terms of production, but Trump is calling for an American basically re-establishment as the top dog, not just in production, but also in world oil, the market itself, which is kind of an exciting idea. He didn't think about that 5 years ago or 10 years ago. But Venezuela is a total disaster. And when you think about, wouldn't it be great to have a little bit of socialism, think about the direction it takes people, it takes countries. It's really very sad because one of the things that happens when you have a socialist takeover is you have family businesses, businesses that have been in the family for generations, the blood, the sweat, and the tears of the family poured into these businesses, all kinds of sacrifices. The government takes those over. And when the government took over the oil industry, that's when things started to go down there, because the government is coming in and saying, we own these trillions, billions, or trillions of dollars worth of assets. And then what stops then is the upkeep of these assets, because then you have people that are appointed to take care of this stuff or appointed in charge that don't have any training whatsoever, and you lose research and development. And so that happens. So we've got to be forever vigilant against the false siren song of socialism. Now, shifting gears, implementing Trump's travel ban. And this is from Fox as well.
administration as it begins to enforce its temporary ban on refugees and visitors from six Muslim-majority countries with little disruption yesterday. The ban, which took effect last night at 8 p.m., only exempts travelers with close family or business ties in the United States. Under the new rules, immediate family and spouses of American citizens do not fall under the ban, but relatives like aunts, uncles, grandparents do. People engaged to be married are also exempt. People rejected for visas can request waivers and will be considered on a case-by-case basis. Now, for refugees, the president set a cap on admissions for the fiscal year at 50,000. According to officials, more than 49,000 have already been admitted for the year. Joining us right now is former Arizona Congressman and Newsmax TV host, J.D. Hayworth. J.D., good to see you. Thanks so much.
Maria, great to spend the morning with you and your team.
Thanks
for the honorary cleanup spot.
Wow, thank you so much. What do you make of this ban, the president's way of cracking down on terrorism?
Well, it's long overdue, and let's just understand something about international law. Every nation state has the right to decide who will be admitted to that state. And the open borders lobby and a lot of folks who are playing politics have been willing to run roughshod over our national security. So I will tell you, I believe it is long overdue. I believe the courts, what we have seen in American jurisprudence in the last 6 months, citing campaign speeches rather than law is reprehensible. I think the Supreme Court will set that right the first Monday in October, and we will return to maintaining our sovereignty as well as our national security.
All the challenges haven't stopped. Now the state of Hawaii is making an emergency filing, Mary, yesterday asking for a federal judge to clarify what the Trump administration can and cannot do under the partial ban. They're arguing for a broader set of exemptions. What do you make of it?
Well, I don't know about the wisdom of this policy, how far it's going to go to keep America safe, so I might take a little bit of issue here.
You're at the Journal editorial page, right? Shocking. I mean, we always kind of disagree
actually,
on the border.
Actually, this is a lot more about executive power than it is about President Trump. The president sets immigration policy, and the idea that somehow these lower courts found a reason to stop this ban from going through was always ridiculous. And I see this more as a win for the presidency more than I see it as a win for President Trump.
That makes a lot of sense. You have to
agree. I appreciate that. I remember, and again, not speaking ill of the departed, but Robert Bartley, I believe it was July 4th, 1999, said there should be a five-word amendment to the Constitution. There shall be open borders. That was a mistake. In the post-9/11 age, if we don't maintain our sovereignty, instead of running the Fred Travellina game show, anything for money,
right,
if we don't start maintaining our national security and reasserting our sovereign rights, we are headed for real trouble. And there are a lot of folks here who want to see that happen.
Yeah, I don't know. A bit of a false choice. Nobody's saying that you're just going to let anybody into the country. However, I do think that it's important that when President Trump put this ban into place, that the courts respect his executive power. And he's doing a lot more to keep America safe. There's a big debate coming up about the NSA and surveillance. That's going to be also very, very, very...
All right, so anyway, it's going in and... You know, the real question, I think, for a lot of liberals is basically just trying to form a question with this, I immediately start to feel confused. What does liberalism stand for? They want open borders, right? So that means lawlessness at the border, right? There's no law whether you come or go, whether you're legal or illegal. You get rid of the category of legal. Everybody's legal. That's chaos and anarchy, right? But does that mean that liberals are not in favor of law? Because in many, many instances, liberals want a lot of law. And I was playing that clip earlier, that gentleman from Willamette University. There is something that has happened. I just want you to think about this. Feel free to call in or just at some point in the future. We have lost the identity of the nation as being Christian. This has kind of been seeded over a number of decades. While many people in the country identify as Christian, many other people don't. You've got a burgeoning movement of atheism, right? But what is the stamp? What's the identity on the culture itself? You know, and I think that is secularism. Secularism has come in the absence of religion. Decision making in the absence of religion is really secularism, and you've got this movement that comes in, and it is, you know, religion has traditions, it has a history and everything, it has creeds, there's councils in Christianity and Judaism, there were councils, there were meetings, there were important movements to define things. All major religions have gone through this stuff. There really is no council or any direction for secularism. So it, in my opinion, it kind of brings in a lot of confusion. Anyway, the question that I'm throwing out there, has secularism moved into the place of religion and the important job of religion in terms of, you know, right, putting down what is right or wrong? If it has come in, is it a fake religion or a real religion? And what can we do about it? Should we do anything about it? Take a break here. 523-1450 at 7:15 on the money. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Coming into your 4th of July weekend. All right, so I think that the biggest problem that the White House has is not texting, tweeting. I guess tweeting, not texting. But I think the biggest problem that the White House has is not filling positions. So you've got this army of Obama employees who understandably and without probably any serious argument are going to be in favor of their old boss. And that's just human nature. And so you've got that, and, you know, you've got leaking, you've got people that are resisting, and they're resisting for an obvious reason. They've spent their entire careers fighting for this thing that was being done by Obama. Whether it was right or wrong really isn't the issue, you know. The issue is how you're going to get these people to buy into the new mission, and you're not going to. You got to get rid of them. So Rex Tillerson is attacking or complaining about this, and I've got another story to tell you, a personal anecdote, but we have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
That's really funny, Kelly O. You know, can't fill the positions. I'll tell you why you can't fill the positions. Because nobody of quality wants to work for a psychotic
nut job. Hey,
like this president.
Frankie, you would be perfect to work for a psychotic nut job.
There's no way in the world I'd work for that psychotic. He's a kook. Why you keep talking? Everything everybody else doesn't address the immediate issue that this guy is deranged. He is deranged, and anybody who doesn't believe that, you are in serious denial.
Hey, when you look at his picture, do you see a mirror?
The way. That's just unique to the Trumper. You know, I mean, you look at his picture, he looks like he's psychotic, for crying out loud. Come on, Kelly. You know, nobody wants to work for a nut job like that. That's why they can't fill the position. And also to mention the fact that they want to be so political about it. That's what Rex Tillerson got all bent out of shape. He wanted a quality person that knew what they were doing relative to world events and the whole nine yards. And no, that Jared Nutcake, 36-year-old dimbulb that doesn't know squat, is telling Rex Tillerson, a quality guy, how the heck to run this. Oh, my God, you people, you nut jobs, you conservatives, you're so screwed up, you don't know what's going on.
All right, so let's just say for the sake of the argument, the GOP is totally screwed up. What does liberalism have to offer but just death and destruction? Look at Venezuela. It is a total nightmare over there to have meat on the table. They have to break into the local zoo and kill a peccary. What is wrong with you people?
There are 169 countries in the world, and you pick Venezuela as one basket case. There's lots of basket cases. That conservative country, North Korea, Why don't you talk about that?
That's another socialist country. It's another socialist disaster. Every time you grow the size of government and you enlarge government's powers and take it away from the people, total disaster results. But that's what you're fighting for. What is wrong with you?
Oh, be serious here. A total government operation, there's no way in the world. Then you're talking tyranny. You're talking,
yes,
you know, monarchy,
yes,
kind of stuff.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, that's the direction these things head in. It's a fight against capitalism, which arises out of democracy, against socialism. Socialism enlarges the powers of the government. You can't have it both ways.
That's right. You can't. You have to have a balance. Everything in life is about balance.
All right.
Exactamente.
All right. What are you doing for the 4th?
Well, I'm gonna go out and have a few beers, and I'm gonna set off some fireworks. You know, little firecrackers. That's about it.
It's impolite.
You know,
It's impolite to set off fireworks inside of a restaurant or a bar.
No, you can't do stuff like that. You can't do that stuff, you know. No. Maybe I come down over to the radio station.
Right.
I'll show you one over there.
All right. I'll meet you outside with a fire extinguisher.
You have a good 4th of July, Kelly.
You too, Frankie. Thanks for the call.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Let's take a little break here. So there's so much power out there. There's only so much power, authority. There's only so many rights. Either government's going to have them or you're going to have them. We have to have a government to organize things. But what the founding fathers realized was the more power the government has, the less that we have. And nobody can make decisions for their own life like you can. I mean, look, this is what I don't understand. You put socialism into practice, it creates hell on earth. And yet all of these people in D.C. trying to kill Trump, trying to kill him politically and install some version of Obama's dreams of my father. His father was a nutcase, speaking of which. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Robin.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to make a comment.
Yes, go ahead.
On what about large government versus limited government. Thomas Jefferson says... He wrote this down in a letter. I don't remember to who it was, but he said, if you have a government strong enough, I'm sorry, a government big enough to give you everything you want, is strong enough to take it all away.
Yes, very nice, very nice. He wrote a lot of great things and was a brilliant guy, and he understood John Locke's theory of a couple of things that we put into place that what your statement there just illustrates. One of which is Rex Lex, the law is king, the king is not the law, number one. And number two, with a constitution, we limit the power, not of individuals, but of the government, right? That's the purpose.
Right.
What's the purpose of the Bill of Rights? To limit the power of the government. It's been the greatest system in history, and yet these fools in D.C. want to tinker with it.
Well, I believe it's because they don't like a constitution that limits their power.
Obviously.
They want to have absolute power.
Obviously.
And so when you destroy the Constitution, then you have absolute power. Socialism, as we know, only works for the ruling class. It does not work for the rest of us.
Indeed. Robin, thank you so much. Happy 4th. Anything else?
No. I wish there was a way that we could educate these people on the left that we don't have a democracy. We have a republic.
We do, but and I've had this fight with Donna. Republicanism presumes a democratic involvement, and people should remember that.
There was an example that I heard at one
briefly,
point.
Briefly.
You have it. You have,
I was about to go to break, but you called.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. All right, folks. We'll take a break here and be right back. All right, so not to get into that too much, but this fight again, I'm kind of aggravated by the fight, which I feel like Donna is continually releasing against me for democracy, that somehow republicanism, which is our form of government, supersedes and eliminates democracy, and it doesn't. democracy is the operative agent inside of the government, which is keeping everything going. And John Locke said that his great political standard was the involvement of the governed in government, and their opinion is important. That doesn't mean you take snap polls and then change your government off that. It's got to be more organized. But unless the government represents the will of the people, it's a tyranny by definition. So anyway, okay. So I've got another, and it's open topic, whatever you want to talk about, but I found a little article, Errors of Enchantment. And this is put out by Rio Grande Foundation. February, so it's a few months old, but I had just stumbled across it. There is no clear definition of what causes an economy to go into, quote, a death spiral. But declining revenues leading to tax hikes, which lead to business and productive citizens leaving, which in turn leads to declining revenues, is the one that I would put forward. And this article is written by Paul Gessing. And Forbes named New Mexico the number one death spiral state in the nation by a long shot. We've known about the declining revenue and young people leaving for a few years, but now it looks like the tax hike phase of New Mexico's death spiral may be here. Democrats in the legislature just passed a budget which includes tax hikes, vetoed by the governor. Undoubtedly, even more troubling is the largest county by population in our state is looking to pass major tax hikes. As the foundation has pointed out in the past, the GRT in Albuquerque has risen by more than 20% since 2000, and Bernalillo County just increased the tax in 2015. We've increased it ourselves here. So, and this is something that we've talked to Ben Rossin about, opinion on why we're not growing like we could be, could go down to something like a small factor like tax rate. Because, you know, business people are logical individuals just like anybody else, and they're going to study things like taxes. Now, I've got this Forbes article open here, and it's pretty sad that we're at the very, very bottom of that death spiral list. We've got another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Good morning, Aaron, and what's on your mind?
Oh, I think your tax spiral is being proven out right now in the state of Illinois. I saw where they have some of the highest taxes in the country, the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. And this morning they were saying over 1,000 workers.
Aaron, you're breaking up. Can you get a better signal?
I'm sorry. I'm on a mountain road. Hope you hear me. Sorry.
No, it's all right. So, anyway, okay, was that your point?
Yeah, that it's obvious that if the states that continue to raise taxes, they're the ones that are suffering the most. And, when are our politicians going to understand the whole relationship there? I don't know. And the other thing is, I want to ask Frankie, man, if he puts on a black ski mask before he calls you every morning.
Probably. Thanks a lot, Aaron. Have a good day. All right, bye-bye. Baklava, I think they're called, isn't it? New Mexico, 142.6, number one public employee salary, 2013 was $325,000 to a physician at the Miners Colfax Medical Center. All right, so we're number one. Let's talk about the taxes, though, just a little bit. And this would kind of tend to bring on this notion of the religious element. What, and this is something I was talking about the other day. What causes people to make decisions and act in general? Is it logic? Well, I had brought up Schopenhauer's idea. Schopenhauer said that it is the will. It is not logic. It's will that is the dominant factor in the world. And I think that's certainly true in socialism. I think there's an emotional element to it. And if you talk to socialists, you talk to, I would say a lot of Democrats are openly in their own minds anyway, socialists, thinking that we need to make a better world. We're going to make a better world through socialism. If you talk to them about it, it's very much emotional. It's very much a battle between good and evil. It is a fight to help people. It is an expression of deeply held beliefs, and that would supersede logical analysis. And the upshot from that is that taxes are seen as almost like, I describe it, you know, they had to do animal sacrifices in the Bible, in the ancient world, right, in the temple and everything. They would kill these animals and bring them in. It almost seems like taxes are like that there's not even a discussion of what is the impact of high taxes. Now, I think it's the Laffer curve that says if you take too much taxes, people won't pay them. If you cut taxes, people will be more likely to pay them, but it'll also put more money into the system because the economy will grow. So we should remember that and not approach taxes as an emotional issue, but as a logical topic, if that makes any sense. 523-1450. All right, a little segue here. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450.
Ain't the years gone by fast? I suppose you have missed them.
I got to tell you, I've got a very weird story. Very, very weird story. That's all I can call it. Now, I'm just going to read it to you. It's from the Houston Chronicle. And New Braunfels. The title says it all. New Braunfels man with history of, quote, deviant sex acts with vegetables, sentenced to life in prison. Now, we don't mean the kind of vegetables that humans turn into. We're talking about the type that you grow in the ground. Charles Ranzier, a 56-year-old New Braunfels man, was sentenced to life in prison Wednesday on a charge of tampering with evidence after he tried to break a meth-filled syringe before a state trooper found it in his vehicle. Now, Charles Ranzier had an abnormal history of vegetables, according to authorities. A Comal County jury sentenced the 56-year-old New Braunfels man to life in prison Wednesday on charges of drug possession and tampering with evidence after a Texas state trooper found him sitting in his truck with melted candle wax on his bare chest and a collection of meth-filled syringes, male enhancement pills, lube, children's clothing, and a cooler of frozen cucumbers with him. I guess he prepared carefully for his trip. When the trooper found him on March 23rd, 2015, along Interstate 35, Ranzier had a syringe in his hand and was trying to break the end of it off to drain out the substance. He refused to comply with the trooper's command, and they battled, they struggled, and it turned into another barnyard squabble, and he had with him a mishmash of items: Barbie dolls, candy, children's clothing, balloons, baby oil, Viagra, Extends, male enhancement pills, duct tape. Sounds like he may have been toying with the idea of taping himself up, rope, and a cooler with frozen cucumbers. Not the first time, though. In 2012, Comal County deputy found him naked inside his truck. Ranzier admitted to the deputy he had been engaged in a deviant sex act involving a squash. And in 2014, a concerned citizen notified a state trooper of a suspicious pickup truck at a nearby baseball field. The trooper found Ranzier engaging in a deviant sex act with a vegetable wearing nothing but women's stockings. Now, I don't know if the vegetable was wearing the stockings or Ranzier, but here's a little clip.
Donald Ranzier, a 56-year-old New Braunfels man, was sentenced to life in prison Wednesday, June 28th,
on a charge of tampering with evidence after he tried to break a meth-filled syringe before a state trooper found it in his vehicle. When a Texas state trooper found Ranciere on March 23, 2015, along Interstate 35, Ranciere had a syringe in his hand and was trying to break the end off of it, according to the Comal County District Attorney's Office. Ranciere refused to comply with the trooper's command to stop, and a struggle ensued. The trooper eventually placed Ranciere in handcuffs and recovered the broken syringe, which tested positive for methamphetamine. After Ranciere was detained, troopers searched his pickup truck and found a mishmash of startling items: Barbie dolls, candy, children's clothing, balloons, baby oil, Viagra, Extend's male enhancement pills, duct tape, rope, and a cooler with frozen cucumbers inside. Further investigation revealed it was not the first time Ranciere has been caught less than fully clothed with vegetables in tow. On November 10, 2012, a Comal County deputy found him naked inside his truck. Ranciere admitted to the deputy he had been engaged in a, quote, deviant sex act involving a squash, according to the district attorney's office. A Comal County jury took less than an hour to sentence Ranciere to life in prison on the charge of tampering with evidence connected to the Interstate 35 incident. He was also sentenced to 20 years in prison on the meth possession charge and fined $10,000. For more details on this case, visit mysa.com.
Well, very nice. Now, I only have one response to that, and this is from one of my favorite movies, Stripes.
Lee Harvey, you are a madman. I want to party with you, cowboy.
All right, so let's take a little break here and to recover from the last story. 523-1450. We'll be right back.
Oh, I almost forgot to ask. Did you hear of my enlistment?
All right, so little science commentary here. Most modern horses descend from Oriental stallions. One headline for you. Antipsychotic meds may help new brain cells grow. Robots taking the finance world by storm. Examining California's very expensive free healthcare. Now, they tried to go to one single payer. You know, it's funny. This guy, who's the guy that's a Warren Buffet? He should buy, you know, he really should buy Golden Corral with that name. But he says the only thing that makes sense is single payer. Where do these extremely wealthy people come up with these idiotic ideas? I can't fathom it. Single payer destroys its government government healthcare. It destroys the healthcare system. We've already seen a partial impact, you know. So sick of these people that, you know, to me, what they're fighting for is to be loved. So being a rapacious capitalist, doing whatever you can to become a billionaire, brings them to one level, and then pretending to be a socialist is the next level, I guess. Okay, now this is from Ross Pomeroy. I was talking about UFOs earlier. There was this weird thing that came up in the news that NASA was going to be announcing that there were aliens out there, and then NASA said that was a hoax. All right, 12 possible reasons we haven't found aliens. From Real Clear Science and Ross Pomeroy. Now, this is from the physicist Enrico Fermi, who was extremely influential. Number one, the galaxy is very old and very large, with hundreds of billions of stars and likely even more habitable planets. Two, that means there should be more than enough time for advanced civilizations to develop and flourish across the galaxy. Are the aliens? Number one, there aren't any aliens to find. These are the 12 possible reasons we haven't found any. As unlikely as it seems, in a galaxy with hundreds of billions of stars, as many as 40 billion Earth-sized planets and habitable zones, we could be alone. Two, There's no intelligent life besides us. 3. Intelligent species lack advanced technology. 4. Intelligent life self-destructs. 5. The universe is a deadly place. 6. Space is big. For example, the Milky Way alone is 100,000 light years across. 7. We haven't been looking long enough. A mere 80 years. 8. We're not looking in the correct place. And 9. Alien technology may be too advanced. 10. Nobody is transmitting. Instead, everybody's listening. Wow, that would be crazy. 11. Earth is deliberately not being contacted. Maybe they just don't like us. They're not that into us. 12. Aliens are already here and we just don't realize it. Well, that's the idea. That is the idea that a lot of people believe. I think it's 6% of people believe in this reptilian species. All right, speaking of frozen cucumbers, millions of pickle-shaped organisms are invading the Northwest waters. The waters off the Oregon coast are mysteriously, and also California, awash with strange jelly-like creatures that look like translucent slugs and are called sea cucumbers. Bizarre organisms, pyrosomes, appeared off Oregon's coast in 2015, but in recent months, their numbers have multiplied into the millions. Typically, they live in tropical waters, but now they're growing in the chilly waters off of Oregon. So, a research net used off of Oregon's Columbia River in late May captured 60,000 pyrosomes or sea cucumbers. And many, many questions, not many answers. Pickle-like creature is in fact a colony made up of individual zooids that join to create a hollow tube-like structure that has one closed end and one open end. And these plankton-eating filter feeders hang out by the hundreds of thousands of feet below the water's surface during the day and migrate vertically by night. So, another mystery. And a brain, deadly brain invading worm is disturbingly widespread in Florida. This is from Gizmodo. Scientists in Florida have found traces of rat lungworm in 5 counties, bolstering the idea that this potentially fatal parasite may be expanding its geographical range on account of it, because, of course, climate change. So this disease, Angiostrongylus infection, was documented in Hawaii, but in the last few months, 6 cases were reported in Florida. The parasitic worm, which spreads through an unholy alliance between snails and rats, is endemic to Hawaii, but has also been detected in California, Alabama, Louisiana, and Florida. And as a new study published in PLOS One revealed, it is growing exponentially in Florida, and it poses a very serious threat to Floridians and humans. Fatality rates for the diseases are low, but the parasites can cause meningitis, and which results in coma or death. Signs of infection include headache, stiff neck, fever, vomiting, nausea, paralysis. And, all right, so how about a little bit of Brian Regan for you? Here's Brian Regan on refrigerators.
We needed a refrigerator for our new place, and I've never bought a refrigerator in my whole life. I went into the appliance store. There's like 900 of them lined up. There's a salesman there. What's this guy supposed to say about refrigerators? Well, you have this refrigerator right here. This keeps all your food cold for 600. You've got this refrigerator. This keeps all your food cold for 800. Check this out. 1400 keeps all your food cold. So this guy's working me on this one. I've never seen a guy work so hard. This one is a very nice refrigerator. It has a meats drawer. And what you do with that
you would put meat. Whatever varieties that you would choose, these would be your meats. So there's no requirement on the types of meats. You could pick bacon, marbled meat. There's an endless selection. Endless. And this one also has a crisper for crispy things. Potato chips. Look in the door when the door's open. This has an egg area. And that's a very nice thing. It's an area for eggs. You put them all in the egg area. You come home and you go, hey, where are the eggs? Right in the egg area. And they're all written in cursive, and that's a real nice feature.
Here's a little more Brian Regan, stupid in school.
No, I'd be a lot better off if I would have studied more when I was growing up, you know? But you know where it all went wrong was the day they started the spelling bee. Because up until that day, I was an idiot, but nobody else knew, you know? And the spelling bee day, you know, popped up. All right, kids, up against a wall. It's time for public humiliation. Spell a word wrong. Sit down in front of your friends. You know, that's great for little egos. Hey, look at me. I'm a moron. I wasn't even close. I was using numbers and stuff. That's why I admired that kid who spelled it wrong on purpose so he could sit down, you know? He knew he wasn't going to win, so why stand there for 3 hours? First round, cat, K-A-T, I'm out of here. Then as he passed you, I know there's two T's. I remember my teacher asked me, Brian, what's the I before E rule? I before E, always. What are you, an idiot, Brian? Apparently. So she explains it. No, Brian, it's I before E, except after C. And when sounding like A, as a neighbor in way. And on weekends and holidays and all throughout May. And you'll always be wrong, no matter what you say. That's a hard rule. That's a rough rule. Plurals were hard, too. Brian, how do you make a word a plural? You put an S. You put an S at the end of it. When? On weekends and holidays. No, Brian. No, let me show you. So she asked this kid who knew everything, Irwin, what is he plural for ox? Oxen. The farmer used his oxen. Brian, what? Brian, what's the plural for box? Boxing. I bought 2 boxing of donuts. No, Brian, no. Let's try another one. Irwin, what is he plural for goose? Geese. I saw a flock of geese. Brian, what? Brian, what's the plural for moose? Moosin'. I saw a flock of moosin'. There are many of them, many much moosin'. Out in the woods, in the woods. The meat's wanting the food. Food is the eating, is it? The meat's wanting the food and in the wooding, is it? In the food and the wooding, is it? Brian, you're an imbecile. Imbecilin. What are you speaking, German, Brian? German. Germaine. Jackson. Jackson 5. Tito. Brian, what the hell are you talking about? I don't know, really.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in. I hope you have a good weekend. And been in contact with Steve Pierce for a little clip next week on the organs, a continuation of the conversation. So enjoy your day, and we'll catch up next week, 523-1450 for next week. Have a good one. Bye. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Ciao.
Funny, I've been there, and you've been here. We ain't had no time to drink that beer. Cause I understand you've been running from the man that goes by the name of the Sandman. He rides the sky like he stood in the eye of a hurricane that's abandoned. I understand you've been running from the man that goes by the name of the Sandman. He lies in the sky like an eagle in the eyes of a hurricane that's abandoned. I understand you've been running from the man that goes by the name of the Sandman. He lies in the sky like an eagle in the eyes of a hurricane that's abandoned. I understand you've been running from the man that goes by the name of the Sandman. He flies the sky like an eagle in the eye of a hurricane that's abandoned.